Steady in the boat. Steady in the boat.
I'm absurd.
Stop piggybacking on what you said!
Good students and damn fine journalists. That's what we are here at Alligator Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is your show for Friday, May 21st. I'm your host, Tyler Jett. We actually did not lose any subscribers from last week's show, which means that you guys are at least giving us a second chance, which we really appreciate. If we didn't do good enough the first time around, we are going to make sure to do good enough this time. Let's get to everyone that's here. To my left is Alligator Sports baseball beat writer Anthony Chang, who is actually playing sick today, like Jordan in the playoffs.
Yes. Please forgive my nasal voice today.
Yeah, he texted me this morning and said, I'm a no-go. I got 102-degree fever. I'm going to be a DNP. But then he stepped up and said, I'm going to try to fight through it. So we'll see how he does playing through injury. And directly across from me is the Alligator Sports gymnastics writer, who will be not covering gymnastics anymore if it's done. But we're still calling him gymnastics writer for now, and that is Tom Green.
Good to see we're actually going to get to record a show today, guys.
Yeah, for people that don't know, which would be everyone outside of this room, the cabinet to all of our equipment was locked this morning, and we came in and we're like, oh, crap, we're not going to be able to actually record a show. And then Tom Green stepped up with a paperclip, and like it was when he used to steal cars in Miami, he opened up the cabinet for us. So luckily, you guys get to hear our beautiful voices. And the most happy person about that is undoubtedly my man to the right, Greg Luca, our softball writer, because he actually had to drive about an hour and a half to get here. So how happy are you about this, Greg?
I'm very excited. If I woke up and then drove 3 hours and accomplished nothing, that would have been a big waste of my time. So I'm glad we're actually doing this.
Yeah, so that's very exciting. And also, because we have Greg here, we're actually going to get to talk about softball this week. Last week, we talked about it for about 5 minutes, and then we decided, well, we don't know what we're talking about, so we're going to wait until Greg shows up. This week, all you softball fans, we're actually going to get a touch on it. Last week, when we talked about the team, they were riding an 8-game win streak. And then Tom made his Gator guarantee that they would win the tournament, right?
Yeah, my bad, guys.
And then what happened, Tom?
They went and lost 9-1 to LSU.
Yeah.
That very night.
So, basically, Tom is terrible at Gator Guaranteed. That's all you need to know.
Hey, you guys didn't get yours right either, so.
Right, but we didn't do it that badly. Like, I think that the fact that you guaranteed it, it went from a game, like, Gators had won, like, every game 9-1 from that point on. Tom makes his guarantee, and then they lose a game 9-1. That's not a coincidence.
Clearly, I either need to start making guarantees that are opposite of what I say, or guarantees that don't involve LSU.
How can you make a guarantee? What do you mean, make a guarantee opposite of what you say?
I should have said that the Gators were going to lose the SEC tournament, because clearly they would have gone and won if I said that.
Okay. Maybe that's the case. All I know is you're very bad at this, and so.
Or he's just a jinx.
You should do a reverse jinx next time. What you don't want to happen, just starts everything that you want to happen. Everything you want to happen, say it won't happen. So, whatever you want to happen, just don't say it. But anyway, we're going to move on to Greg. You know more about the team than anybody here. So what happened on last Friday?
It was an interesting game for them. They were just sloppy all around. They were facing their first great pitcher for the first time in a while because the win streak they were on, that was against Mississippi State, who's like almost last in the SEC. Then North Florida, who is just not very good at all. And then South Carolina, who's the worst team in the conference. So they weren't really used to facing the kind of quality pitching that they saw from LSU, and that really hurt them at the plate. And then the pitchers weren't used to facing the kind of quality bats they saw from LSU, and it hurt them in the circle. So it was an all-around bad game for them.
So, I mean, they kind of got to the bully stance a little bit, where they were just picking on the little kids, and they got someone their own size, and they got beat up a little bit.
It seems that way, yeah.
Okay. I mean, really looking at the team now, I mean, how surprised were you that this happened?
I mean, not incredibly, because typically earlier in the season they struggled against teams that had the dominant pitching, but then once they swept LSU when they played them in April, so I really didn't expect them to lose, especially not this badly. The biggest loss of the season for them. And then typically I figured they're a pretty experienced team. There's a lot of youth, but there's a lot of experience too. So I figured they would bring their A game in an SEC tournament type situation, but it just didn't work out that way.
Hmm. Okay, now here's something I think we should kind of talk about. What do you think is better for a team going into the postseason? Like, coming in and maybe if they had squeaked out a couple of games, maybe they played as bad as they had played, but they were able to escape that and win against LSU and go on and win the SEC championship. If they won those games but didn't play any better, do you think that's better, or do you think it's better for them to get killed like they did?
I don't know. I mean, maybe this could be a wake-up call for them, but I like to think that they're already focused and they're already looking for the win and they're already giving it 100%. So maybe maybe something like this will snap them into their earlier season form. But
yeah, sometimes it's like one of those things where if you lose a game close, it's really detrimental to you and it really hurts you. But sometimes when you get blown out from a game, it actually sometimes helps you. Does anybody else agree with me on that? Or
no, I agree with you on that. I think it teaches a team more, a little more than just losing a close game, you know. But Greg, you were saying that the team struggles with dominant pitching. What do you think that means for the rest of the postseason? I mean, you're gonna face quality teams from here on out.
Yeah, it could be tough for them. One of the girls that they're facing this weekend, well, they might face, is from UCF, and she actually pitched 9 innings against them and only gave up 4 runs, which is very good against this lineup. So she could give them some troubles again. But actually, the other two teams don't have any kind of dominant pitchers, so they might be all right in the regional. We'll talk about that later. But it could be very difficult for them to win the whole thing if they can't continue to put together hits against great pitchers, because that's what they're going to see, especially if they get to the World Series.
Okay, now, I mean, obviously the season's very close to over. I mean, they've got the postseason here, but, I mean, a lot of games on the belt at this point. We have a good picture of how each player is individually. And this is a game we played at the beginning of baseball season. Me and Adam Berry and Bob Colobi played it. If anybody remembers, it's when Bob screamed out, "I'm absurd," which I don't know if that's on the theme song anymore, but Bob was going crazy loving Preston Tucker. And so we're going to play a similar game here. Basic rules are we're going to go through every single player that's playing consistently for the Gators, and we are going to put them on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being this girl's going to have a mental breakdown on the field, might throw her bat to the crowd, 10 being this player's a complete baller, and if the game's on the line, you want the ball in her hands pitching, or you want the ball, or you want the bat in her hands ready to make a big hit. So, Greg, you're going to be doing all the rankings because, frankly, I mean, I can throw rankings out if you want me to, but they're going to be pointless.
Pick numbers, yeah.
I don't even know what these girls look like, so I can't even give you a ranking of, like, how pretty I think they are. But
the only one I could probably rank is Francesca Nea, just because we've heard so much about her and throwing all these records and all this stuff. So.
Okay. Well, Greg, let's start off. You want to go through the list here?
Yeah, well, we'll just get started at the top of the order. Asia Pokolva plays second base. I have her as an 8. Batting .327 this season, it's the lowest of her career, but she still leads the team in walks, and she gets on base plenty, and she plays solid in the field, so I'm going to give her an 8.
Okay, what's her, what year is she?
She is a junior.
Okay, so
what's her on-base percentage?
I have it right here. Going to quiz me?
I'm just kidding. You say she gets on base a lot, I just want her to
look that
464.
464, okay, that's pretty solid.
Solid for a leadoff hitter. It's third on the team. So she steals plenty of bases, so she's got enough speed to be at the top of the order.
What are the rules of basing on softball? I actually don't know. Can you get a lead off, or is it?
You cannot get a lead. You have to wait till I think the ball leaves the pitcher's hand.
All right. Well, I have to cover softball this weekend, and I'm not too excited about it because the field looks like a lily field. You can't even get a lead off, so I'm not very happy. And there's a run rule. Those are my three things I don't like about softball. But
we were actually debating this. Me and Tyler were talking about it. What is the run rule exactly?
It's 8 runs after 5 innings. So no matter what, the game's going to go 5 innings, and that's how they get the 22-0 score in there that game a little while back. But it's got to go 5.
Okay. Yeah, I wonder if you're on the other team and you're down 22-0 in like the 4th inning, and you're like, well, we've got one more inning left. You know what we should do? Let's get this one at 8. Like, do you take that attitude, or are you just like, we're done, let's just go home?
I have no idea. I would be trying to get out of there as quick as possible if I was down by that much. But I know when the Gators are up by 7, they definitely aim to end it right there, so.
Yeah, I guess that has to do with just the lack of parity in softball, and it's a situation where there's some really good teams and some other teams that just aren't.
I mean, overall, supposedly, I haven't been following it before this year, but supposedly the parity is better than it has been, but there still are some teams that just can't compete.
Still a need for a run rule.
Just like even like in football, like just sometimes there's teams that come in here and they just can't compete with the kind of athletes that we have.
Okay, so number 2.
All right, that would be Michelle Moultrie. She took some time at leadoff this season. I have her as a 9. She's extremely fast, leads the team with a .411 average, turns bunts into base hits all the time. She plays really well in center. She's got 5 outfield assists this season, which is like the leading on the team. Has an absolute cannon, guns out plenty of runners at the plate and stuff. So she's a very good player and a sophomore, so she'll be around for a little while.
Okay, and she has 0 errors, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's 3 players on the team that have no errors.
Yeah, overall they're pretty good in the field. They were a lot better earlier in the season. They went on a rough stretch. They were first in the nation in fielding percentage. They had a rough stretch in there, but they're back to pretty good form.
Okay. Now moving on to number 3, everyone's favorite girl, Francesca Enea.
Obviously a 10. Has 8 different career records at UF. She draws a ton of walks to get on base over 500, and then when she actually gets hits to get on, 40% of the time it's a home run. So can't argue with that.
So she's getting on. Her slugging percentage is like .840, but what's her? You know her on base percentage is?
On base is .505.
So her OPS for you stat heads out there is insane. It's like 1300 OPS. So
yeah, before conference play started, and they were going against the lesser teams, it was up like 1800-ish because she was slugging over 1,000.
It was over 1,000.
Through 20 or 30 games, it was over 1,000.
That's not even fair.
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, and obviously she has the U.S. school record for home runs in a season, and she also has the career home run record in the SEC. So, yep, okay, we'll give her, okay, yeah, well, I think we can agree that she's a 10. Yeah, and again, we're talking about softball ability. all right, now moving on to number 4.
That would be freshman Brittany Schutte. Has already the freshman records for home runs in RBIs, batting .324. Actually, it's surprising to see that the spot behind Francesca is obviously going to be the toughest spot in the lineup to hit because she gets so few pitches to hit and it's difficult to protect a player that good. And to see a freshman plugged in there says a lot about her ability. So I actually put that as a 10 just based on preseason expectations. If she was like a junior, it would probably be a 9 or so. But 10 for Brittany Schutte.
So in the context of the fact that she's come in here and she's had to like protect Francesca and the fact that she's a freshman,
yeah.
So you have to give it a 10. Okay. Fair enough. All right. Is there anybody on this team that you're not going to... Are we going to get anybody here that is going to be like a 2? Because I'm really hoping we can just like bury one girl here.
I mean, there's a 5. I mean,
there's a 5.
Okay.
You're right. I'm excited about when we get to the 5. We're going to call whoever that is out. Number 5, Megan Bush.
Have her as an 8. She's gotten better every year she's played here, this year included. Hasn't been amazing at shortstop. Taking some plays at first base, too, but hits a bunch of home runs. She had the freshman record before Schutte broke it. Pretty good power hitter. .369 is not bad, and batting .500 is pretty good in the order.
Okay, what year is Megan?
She's a junior.
Okay, and you said she's been improving every year steadily also?
The batting average has gone up like 20 or 30 points each year.
That's steady and consistent. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, number 6, Kelsey Bruder.
Kelsey Bruder I have as a 7. Her expectations were a lot higher for this year. She started the season as number 4. Last year, she set the school record for total bases in a season. Just this year, having the average down to .338 is not her best, but she did move down the order. She's still doing solid. You can't really say much bad stuff about somebody hitting over .300. So.
Right. Okay. Number 7, Tiffany DeFelice.
This one's interesting. She got hurt. She missed about, I think it was about 10 games. A couple weeks ago. Since she come back, she's got to be like a 10. She's been absolutely on fire, hitting over .500. I haven't recrunched the numbers from the last couple games, but it was over .500 when I checked it. And before that, she was batting about .250. So since then, she's been one of the best players in the team, and she's probably going to move up in the lineup for this weekend.
Okay, so before she got hurt, she was hitting .250?
Yeah.
And now her average is like .337, so that's
incredible. It's been skyrocketing since she got back in the lineup. She said she's just trying to make up ground on everybody else.
She's kind of pulling a Mike Zunino of the U.S. baseball team's catcher, who was batting .211 at one point, and then went on a 12-game stretch and it bumped all the way from .211 to like .290. Yeah, so and he got pied in the face at one point, but that's we'll talk about that later. Okay, now number 8, Corey Brooks.
Corey Brooks, it's rare that you say this about one of the number 8 hitter in the order, but she's probably the team's best clutch hitter. For that, I'll give her a 7.
She's had a couple of game-winning hits.
Yeah, she's had a couple of game-tying hits when they went on to lose it later. She had a couple of game-winning hits. She's just, whenever there's like a one or two-run deficit, Corey Brooks is probably the person you want at the plate, which is weird for someone who's near the bottom of the team in batting average. But she's a senior. She's very laid back, and she handles the pressure really well. So she comes up in big situations, and she also plays very, very well at third.
So she's conserving her hits is the nice way to say it.
Yeah.
She's at .285, but she's conserving her hits for the right time.
Exactly.
Okay, what position does she play?
She plays third base.
Third base. Okay. And last, and I'm wondering who could be getting the 5 here. We haven't heard it yet, but it could be Brittany Walker, number 9.
Yeah, this almost isn't fair. She's getting the 5. This almost isn't fair because she's not really in the starting lineup anymore. But we'll throw the other person in there later.
Okay.
She's a slap hitter who rarely ever walks. And you're still only batting .282, which isn't great. Decently fast. Not a very good fielder by any definition. Just overall not the best player on the team or even close. And maybe as a freshman, she has a lot of time and a lot of room to improve. And it'll probably get better down the road. But for now, a 5.
A 5. Okay, well, you're saying she's not a good fielder. What's her fielding percentage? Or like how many errors has she committed to now?
Percentage... It's a little bit off because she's taken some plays in the outfield, too, but the fielding percentage is at .915. which sounds pretty good, but if you take just that, it sounds pretty decent, but if you take just the shortstop, it's probably down below 900.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, fielding percentage is kind of one of those things that's kind of hard to read into, because, I mean, even for great, even like really bad fielders don't commit that many errors, if you think about it, like on the scale of plays that they don't commit errors versus plays that they do commit errors, it's still going to be pretty small. So usually, I mean, almost every fielder's in the 900 range. And I know on the UF baseball team, which I cover, the lowest fielding percentage is like 890. So, yeah, like 915 is not very good.
Also covering softball, you'll see this weekend that not a whole lot of stuff gets called errors when it definitely could. So.
Oh, really?
Those numbers could be a lot worse.
The same as in baseball, probably, too.
There's some times when we've seen some plays, because I think the SIDs are actually the home team SIDs are the ones that call the errors.
Yeah.
And there are some times when you're watching the game, and it'll look like there should have been an error, and just be like, well, I don't think he could have made that play, so we're just going to say that's an infield hit. Like, it'll be a hit to the third base, and the third baseman will get it, kind of be real slow to like recover like or whatever, and then throw it late or throw it off or whatever, and the SID would just be like, that guy probably would have ran out the play anyway, even though he hit ground ball to third base. Everyone can tell it should have been an out. But so yeah, I mean, I think that there's probably, I would say probably for almost every team in college baseball and college softball too, the fielding percentages are higher than they should be because the home team, which is half of your games, are being called with a generous error to non-error ratio. But a little fun fact is when, going a little tangent here, when Pat McMahon was at UF, the baseball coach before Kevin O'Sullivan, his pitching coach, would apparently call the baseball SID during the game when it's a sketchy play and say, call it an error, because then all of a sudden those errors make all those runs become unearned runs, and then all of a sudden the pitcher's ERA goes way down. So I think that's just a good example of how subject that is, and I don't know how there isn't someone that's an objective person coming in to make those calls.
Yeah, in softball it's kind of the opposite. A lot of the times there'll be a play that gets called an error, and then after the game the coach will say something and they'll go back in and change it to not an error.
Like after the game?
Yeah. So
the
they do a lot of different stuff with the stats. It's kind of questionable.
It's definitely questionable.
You said for baseball they get favorable error calls at home, and that's half their games. So then half their games are on the road, so shouldn't that average out?
Well, yeah, but, I mean, the SID, for instance, the SID at UF is also calling the error rules for the other team, and he's not necessarily going to call a bunch of errors on the other guy. Like, it's on the away games, you're getting a normal call, like, I think. You're watching, he'll watch the away team objectively and be able to say, okay, this team, they're not, I mean, whatever. They'll call them the right way. But at home, I think that they are too kind to the fielders. So it's up. I mean, you look at the fielding percentage in the away games alone, and you probably get a better picture of what their fielding percentage actually is, but the home games mess it up. Okay, and you said there's another person in the line of you wanted to rate.
Yeah, Kelsey Horton is now batting number 9 usually. She only found her way into the starting lineup a couple weeks ago, but in her 37 career at-bats, she's slugging .946. She already has 6 home runs, so I think she's going to be a fixture in the lineup for a while. It's another freshman who's going to be around for some time.
And when did she kind of emerge into the lineup?
I don't have the exact game. I don't remember exactly. Because she took a lot of the times earlier in the season when they would be blowing teams out, she would come in like the fourth or fifth and get some at-bats there. But she's only been a starter for about a week. So.
Okay. All right, now moving on to make some noise real quick. Stephanie Brombacher, pitcher. Everyone's favorite screamer.
Yeah, I have her as a 7.
She screams on the mound.
Yeah, it's important to know. I have her as a 7. The 2.06 ERA is decent. From her, she expects better. For a lot of other people, that would be good. But
you know what Stacey Nelson had last year?
I can try to find it while we're talking here.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely said that she expects better from herself, and she holds herself to pretty high standards out there. And then the illegal pitches have been a problem, too.
Talk about that a little bit.
What
exactly
is
an illegal pitch?
It's interesting. It's any time the pitcher has both feet off the ground at the same time, or they fail to drag the back foot, or there's a third thing that I forget what it is.
Throw overhand.
Stacey Nelson was a .61 ERA.
So Stacey had 0.61, and Stephanie Brombacher has a 2.06. So yeah, I mean.
It's not bad, but it's not last Stacey Nelson like.
Yeah, but anyway, the illegal pitches. What happens is anytime she takes a little hop sometimes after she pushes off the mound. And it's
just like a hop step, like a basketball player?
Sort of, I guess you could say. She's just a little bit like 2 inches off the ground, and the third base umpire is always looking for that, and they call it. And it turns turns the pitch into a ball, like even if it was like a recorded out, they'll go back and make it a ball and the player still gets to hit. If there's anybody on base, they get to move over. So it's something that...
Sort of like a balk.
Yeah, sort of.
I mean, kind of like a balk. Oh, wait, is runners on base get to move over? Did you say
runners
that?
On base get to move over.
Okay, so it's a balk. It's even worse than a balk, though, because it also affects the at-bat itself, because it's like after the pitch was actually thrown. And you said, you were telling me earlier that that's something that they put more of an emphasis on this year versus in years past.
Yeah, it's something that earlier in their careers, they weren't really worrying about it as much, but this year it's something that they've made sure the umpires are looking for. And it's tough because you get used to the same motion, obviously, doing something your entire life, and then you kind of mess it up when you're out there, and you're just used to it at that point. But they say that in the bullpen and in the practice sessions, she keeps the back foot down and everything's fine, but when you get the adrenaline pumping and the little extra energy come game time, it just happens.
Yeah, it probably comes out naturally, kind of like Tim Tebow's throwing motion, what people were saying about that. I mean, there's certain things that you've been trained to do so much in your life that once you get into a game situation, it probably goes, like, even if you've worked on it, people think it's probably just going to revert back to what you've been doing your whole life, which is understandable. All right, I mean, let's go and preview this weekend. Now they're hosting a regional starting tomorrow. Let's talk about their first match. Who are they playing?
They are going to play Bethune-Cookman first, which shouldn't be that difficult. Bethune-Cookman's one of the automatic qualifying teams. So, like, the first round of the NCAA tournament for basketball, we're 1-16, one of those kind of games.
Okay, this is the 1-16 matchup?
Yeah, that shouldn't be too difficult.
Should be fun for me. I'm covering the Bethune-Cookman team for some other newspaper, so should be enjoyable.
Enjoy that.
So, yeah, you think run rule?
If I had to guess, I would say yeah. I mean, obviously, I don't know a whole lot about Bethune-Cookman softball, but I would assume run rule.
16-1 is going to be a run rule. Okay. But interestingly enough, though, I mean, UF obviously got one of those highest seeds, but like you were saying in your article earlier this week, it's not necessarily pervy for them. I mean, they've got a couple teams that they've played already this year and struggled against. You want to talk about that? UCF, FIU.
Honestly, if we were doing Gator guarantees this week, I would guarantee that they don't make it out of this regional, just to be bold. But it's interesting because FIU is, before LSU, I think that was their worst loss of the season. It was an 8-3 game here in Gainesville on a rainy afternoon where everybody kind of struggled a little bit, and it just seemed like they weren't into it. And it was against the number two pitcher because they were going to save Brombacker for the second game if it actually happened. But, yeah, FIU pretty much had their way with the Gators. They put up 8 runs and... And then their pitching, which isn't that great typically, did all right against this team. The holding of 3 runs is pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm. How many losses did the Gators have this year?
7.
7 losses. Okay, and one of them was against FIU.
Yeah.
And UCF also kind of gave them a run for the money. And UCF and FIU were, like I said, both in the Gators regional.
Yeah, UCF, they played their longest game of the season when they went to UCF. It was a 9-inning game against UCF senior pitcher Ashley Cole, who is very, very strong in the circle and could give the Gators some more problems this weekend, just like she did that game. Because they only had one run through 6 innings. They were about to lose it before they came through in the last inning.
Okay. Obviously, we've talked about this a little bit. Obviously, the struggles from last week. Do you see anything that they really need to do to make sure that they win? Like, is there anything that you saw last week and you're like, wow, if they do that again, they won't make it out of the regional?
Last week, I think it was just a bunch of little things, really. Just like tiny mistakes, like little fielding errors or just certain people who had bad games at the plate, just little things like that, that if everybody plays their best, they'll be fine. I don't think there's anything major that they have to, like, work on or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, softball, baseball, both kind of similar in that you don't really, I mean, there's sometimes if guys just can't hit. There's nothing you can really do about it. You just kind of have to wait it out. Okay, I know we're not doing Gator guarantees, but where do you see this team going? See them advancing out of the regional?
It's interesting because I think there's like a 50-50 chance they don't make it this weekend, which would be like predicting Northern Iowa to beat Kansas in the NCAA tournament, but clearly that kind of stuff does happen. Mm-hmm. If they get past this weekend, though, I think they could have an easy time with the next round because Arizona State is actually having to travel to Massachusetts to play in their regional. So with something like that, there's a good chance they could get knocked off, which would make the second round series even easier, and then they would be in the World Series.
Okay, so you're saying, I mean, this week, you think this weekend, this original round, regional, is going to be actually harder than the second round?
Yeah, I think so.
Interesting. Okay.
Why do you say that? Just because they've struggled with these opponents before?
Maybe it's something about the Florida teams just really want to beat UF because UF is the school in Florida, and they just give it their all every time. And maybe they'll be thinking, maybe, I hope not for their sake, but maybe the team will be looking ahead to some of the World Series, maybe next round, that kind of thing, and maybe sleep on some of these teams. Not work out well for them considering the history this year.
Okay. Well, all right. Let's move on to baseball now. I got Anthony Chang here trying to fight through that injury that he's got going on, aka the 102 degree fever. So hopefully he'll be able to help me out, the other Alligator Sports baseball writer. Let's talk about last weekend. UF got a sweep. Want to talk about the Georgia? Want to talk about the Georgia weekend? UF won all three games.
Yeah, I mean, they won all three games, but me and Tyler definitely agree they should have lost probably at least two of the three. Because Georgia found ways to lose
handed Florida the wins. It's one of those things you watch certain teams and it's just like, they just don't know how to win. I know that's a cliche. Like, I don't know how you can measure whether or not a team knows how to win. But Georgia does not know how to win. That Friday night game, UF came, went into the bottom of the ninth down 3-2. First batter hits. I don't remember who it was, but hit a ground ball to their third baseman Kevin Ruiz, just sails it over the first baseman's head. So it's the runner on first. Then I think Jonathan Pigg came in to lay down a sack bunt, and he bunted right to the pitcher. Should have been an easy out at second. The pitcher throws it second. Probably actually got the runner out, but the umpire called it safe. My dad was watching the game on ESPNU at home, and he texted me and said, yeah, he was definitely out there. I guess the umpire's ruling was that the Georgia second baseman fell off the bag, but apparently he didn't. So then UF has runners from first and second. They hit another ground ball to third, and the third baseman again goes to the first and just throws it over the first base. Third baseman Kevin Ruiz throws it over first baseman's head. Runner who was going from second to third, rounds third, goes home, tied game, runners on second and third. Then UF has their number eight hitter up. I can't remember who it was, but they intentionally walked their number eight hitter, who wasn't doing good, to get to Mike Zunino, who's sitting ninth in the UF lineup. But like we said earlier, Zunino's been hot. Yeah, he's been real hot.
So. Oddly enough, I think that eight hitter was Tyler Thompson.
Yeah, so. That's like a, I mean, if you don't follow the Gators, you know that when Tyler Thompson's up to the plate, that's a guaranteed out this year.
With his Angels in the outfield?
Yeah, he has some fans in the left field bleachers that do the Angels in the outfield thing whenever he's doing anything. Whenever Tyler Thompson shows up, they start doing these Angels in the outfield thing, but it's not helping Tyler because he's not been doing well. Regardless, they walk Tyler to load the bases, tie game, and now Zunino comes up and all he has to do is get a sack fly, and that's exactly what he does. He gets kind of a semi-long fly ball to left field, and then Gators tag up in third, score, win 4-3 on Friday. Then, on Saturday... Saturday they went again 4-3 on a walk-off home run by Ben McMahon, catcher, which is good, obviously. Like, there's not, like, Florida, Georgia didn't hand him that part, but two of UF's four runs came on wild pitches, and UF's offense just wasn't getting it done, and they still got half of their runs because the pitcher couldn't throw the ball to the catcher.
To give Georgia credit, the three starting pitchers that pitched that weekend against the Gators, they all came in with, like, over 6 ERAs, opposing batting averages of 360, 370, and they gave three quality starts.
Yeah, they shut Gators down, actually.
Which I don't know if it's they pitched well or UF bats weren't, you know, they weren't throwing the bats well, but they shut UF's offense down, which doesn't look too good for them, but I mean, we'll see what happens this weekend.
Yeah, which brings me to Sunday's game in the Georgia weekend. I can't remember who Georgia's starting pitcher was, but he also came in, like you said, like an ERA of 8 or something, but I think he only allowed one run in 6 innings, or 5 innings. It was really good. They pulled him after the fifth. They brought in some bullpen guys, and UF proceeds to have a 7-run sixth inning at the bullpen, in which they were walked 6 times in a row. The relief pitcher, they brought in 5 different relief pitchers for Georgia that inning, and nobody could throw strikes. At one point, how many balls in a row did they
15
throw?
15 straight balls.
At one point, they threw 15 straight balls. It was laughable. And they talk about we interviewed some players after. We interviewed Nolan Fontana, the Gators leadoff hitter and shortstop, and we're like, you know, is that hard? And said, nope, that's really easy. That's about as easy as it gets. Kevin O'Sullivan, U.S. baseball coach, said afterward he didn't even want to talk about it because he didn't want to jinx it. He said he's been in those situations and knows how sick it is to be in a situation where you just literally can't throw strikes.
Up in the press box, we almost felt bad after a while. We just wanted to throw a strike.
I was upset. I was in the press box and, like, usually try to stay objective, but in this situation, I was just angry. I was like, I'm wasting my time watching a Little League team out here try to throw strikes. It was ridiculous. And so, so UF got the sweep. Didn't have to do anything. Georgia gave them a sweep.
To put into context, Georgia came in with only 3 conference wins.
Right.
So they've been struggling all season long.
Right. Georgia's the worst team in the SEC this year. But interestingly enough, there were more fans at McKeithen Stadium this weekend than at any weekend this season. So I don't know exactly what happened. I don't know if they're like, well, if you want to see the Gators win, just go to this weekend.
Yeah.
Because they had a lot of fans. I don't know why. But a lot of people showed up, and Florida was given the sweep, which I guess leads me to my column, what I wrote about this week in Tuesday's edition of the Alligator, basically saying that I really think all American sports and college sports included, and I just talked about college sports, is that I'm a big fan of the relegation system that they use in Europe with club soccer, where the worst team from the best, all the clubs are divided into about six different leagues in England specifically. That's what they do. They do it all over Europe, but I'm just talking about England for the example's sake. They have six different leagues. The best league is the Premier League. Obviously, I think people who follow soccer obviously know that. The worst three teams from the Premier League every year drop down to the league lower. The best three teams from the second-tier league jump up to the Premier League the next year. And, I mean, it goes up and down throughout the six leagues, and I think that they should try to create some sort of system like that for all American sports. I think it's a way more interesting to see teams. If you're the team that you're a fan of that's struggling late in the season, I think it's really interesting to have to be sitting there and being like, well, we could be dropping down to a worse league next year. We need to make sure that this doesn't happen. Like, there's much more of a rooting interest. Teams can't tank for the draft because of that. So I just think that – I think that's a more interesting system. And I said that they should do that in college sports. Basically, with Southeast, you would have – or you would have every school divided into four quadrants, Southeast, Northeast, Southwest, Northwest. And you'd have the best team – the best 16 teams from the Southeast would play in the SEC baseball conference, or you can name whatever you want. It doesn't matter. But the basic thinking would be, let's say a team like Georgia, who's in worst – the last place, they would get dropped down to a worse conference the next year, while a team that was not as good would jump up to the next conference. Basically, what the system would create is a situation where every school would probably have different teams in different conferences. Like, U.S. basketball team might be in the Atlantic Sun after struggling for a couple of years. U.S. baseball team might be in the Premier League because, you know, they're one of the best in the nation. Football team, too. It'd be that kind of situation. What was everyone else's thoughts on that?
I think that's a good idea, but just the fact that, like you said, maybe different sports from different schools would be in different conferences, I think that might be a little bit of a problem, like something that they have to work through. That might be a little kink in the system. So
yeah, I think it's an interesting idea, but at the same time, like in college sports particularly, a lot of their conference play is like based on like old traditional rivalries, and when you have a relegation system, you might lose some of those rivalries like on a yearly basis. And I don't think a lot of college fans would take too kindly to that.
Yeah, I guess. I guess my argument against that is that Florida and Georgia are rivals, and that was probably the worst weekend I've ever seen in college baseball. So, I don't know. I'd rather watch, like I was saying in my column at the end, I'd rather watch Coastal Carolina, a team that's number five in the nation, just balling. I'd rather have them come into Gainesville, and I get to watch UF versus Coastal Carolina instead of UF versus Georgia. But, whatever.
I think from a pure sports standpoint, that's a good idea, but I think financially, it's like being in the SEC is big business, and being in the Atlantic 10 probably isn't as much. So if the school had the chance to get relegated, they probably wouldn't be a big fan of that.
Right. Now, you got to remember that I live in a fantasy land. So this won't happen. I'm sure it won't happen, but I would love to see it happen. And, I mean, actually, I shouldn't say I'm sure it won't happen. I don't think it will happen for a long time.
If it does happen, are you going to demand your cut?
I don't know who's getting paid out of that, but I would love if they call it the Tyler Jett rule, then I demand my cut. I don't know. I'm sure other people have thought of this, but I just think it's way more interesting watching European soccer because of that. And I think it's cooler because it creates these leagues that are super competitive leagues, and you're fighting to stay. And when you have to fight to stay in your league, you're going to play better. Which kind of brings, let's talk about your column real quick too. You're talking about the NBA draft lottery. It kind of brings the same point that you were saying, that you don't want teams to be able to tank at the end of the season to get a better draft pick. If it's a relegation system, you obviously can't tank to get a better draft pick. But bringing it up, let's go to Anthony's column, talk about what your column was in today's paper. Or actually, we're recording this on Thursday, this is the Friday show, but this will be in Thursday's Alligator.
It was basically just about the recent NBA lottery that just happened, saying how the system works, as opposed to the NFL and the major league system, where they just do the first pick is the worst team, and then the last pick is the best team that season. Where the NBA, they, as everyone knows, they stick all the non-playoff teams they bunch them all together, and they have a lottery as to decide the selection. And I liked it just because it, like Kyler said, it prevents teams from tanking. It provides, I'll send my column, it provides something the fans to be excited about for teams that aren't in the playoffs during this time of the year. They have something to look forward to, where, you know, in the NFL, you're pretty much set as to where you're going to pick. But, you know, you could be the eighth worst team in the NBA, and you might get lucky and get the first pick and have a chance to pick John Wall. So I think it's a pretty good system, and that's pretty much it.
Okay, what does anybody else think about the lottery?
I'm a fan of the NBA lottery, but, you know, there's all those conspiracy theorists out there that say the NBA rigs it. I think if the NBA wants to make it a more fan-friendly experience, then actually show the drawing of the ping-pong balls.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing more I like to see than seeing a bunch of ping-pong balls being drawn out.
No, but I mean, then that eliminates...
Yeah.
Because, like, it's, like, shrouded in mystery. Well, like,
I think there's a lot of other things you could do to make it more fan-friendly, but, okay.
Apparently, they used to do it behind closed doors completely, but now, just because everyone talks about that conspiracy
theories,
they have all the GMs and all the team ladies. Representatives, they're in the room while they draw the ping pong ball. So I guess that says something toward it. You know?
I mean, I like the idea in theory of a draft lottery, but I don't think teams tank any more or less under the lottery system than under the old, than under the just the rank them from top to bottom and then reverse it for the draft order thing. Because at least if you have the worst record, then you have a better chance at number one overall, right? So
yeah.
People are still going to tank for that because winning still doesn't matter because you're still not going to make the playoffs.
I can see that, but it doesn't provide as much motivation as like the NFL, where you're set. You know, you're for sure getting the first pick. You're like, there's a chance that you're not getting the first pick. So why lose all these games and lose all your fans when, you know, you're not for sure getting the top pick?
Right. I think that I remember a couple of years ago, Bill Simmons from ESPN.com wrote a column about this topic and kind of said that the lottery is good now. It helps a little bit, but it can be a way better. His argument was that you go back to how it was originally when the lottery first was started using, I think in the 80s when they started the lottery.
It was 85 or 86.
Okay, before I was born, when I was just
before,
a sperm. What they did back then was there was no rules where if you were last, you'd be guaranteed a top four pick. It was every team that doesn't make the draft, I believe, or every team that doesn't make the lottery. No, every team that doesn't make the playoffs goes in the lottery, and they all have an equal chance to get the number one pick. That, I think, is a better system because there's absolutely no reason for you to tank at that point. Plus, I think it's a kind of a cool idea. I'm not necessarily about parity where every team is equally okay. I like the fact that there's certain teams that are great. I like watching teams that are great. I like watching the Lakers because they're a great team. I like watching the Celtics right now because they're kind of a loaded team, have a lot of superstars, and they play really well together. That's way more entertaining to me than every team being balanced. So when you have a situation like, let's say it's a team that just barely misses the playoffs, they win the lottery all because they have just as good chance as anyone else. If they win the lottery and they get John Wall, they go from a team that was a pretty decent team to a very, very good team that could win the championship the next year. So I think that would be really cool. And like we were talking about earlier with teams tanking, the Spurs definitely tanked to get Duncan. They definitely tanked. They had David Robinson sit out like half of the season when his injury wasn't that severe, so they could get Duncan next year. So I don't think it completely prevents tanking.
But at the same time, looking at the NFL the last few years, I think it's safe to say that the Rams and Lions didn't tank. They were going to get that first pick regardless.
maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the motivation. I think at a certain point that they're just so bad that I do think people give up, but I don't think it's because of the drafting necessarily. I don't think a lot of guys in the – guys that are in the locker room that are playing football for their careers, I don't think they're sitting there saying, let's do bad, or basketball really, or any sport. I don't think they're sitting there saying, let's do really bad right now, we'll get a good draft pick. They have some pride, and they want to do good at their job. They're just not that good of a team,
yeah.
I think. So
that's what I'm saying.
I don't think every team tanks. I think that some of the guys at the higher level might try to make their team worse so that they can get a better draft pick. I think that's what happened in that situation. I was talking about the Spurs back in like 96 or 97 before Duncan. When they had Robinson set out for like half the season, I think they were like telling David, "Hey man, maybe let's just you know milk this a little bit and see what we can get out of it."
Yeah, that's why you have teams at the trade deadline. You know, they feel they're out of playoff contention. They're gonna trade off their big players. You know, clear some cap space so that they can be a better team the next season or do worse the second half of the season so they can get a better draft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to go down too far into this, but like I said earlier, I love living in a fantasy land. I also like conspiracy theories, which makes me really enjoy the draft and. Really enjoy the whole like thing with Ewing and all those different theories out there. Look them up. There's tons of them, and I love reading those stuff. But one thing that was proposed, I think, by Malcolm Gladwell was just talking about this off the cusp. And what he was saying was like, instead of doing a draft at all, just go to like a college system where every team can just start recruiting players, but you have a salary cap. But he was just saying, how much more interesting would that be? And so all of a sudden, certain teams, it would force teams to be more creative with this theory. Teams that maybe like, let's say Minnesota doesn't really have much of an appeal right now. All of a sudden, Minnesota becomes like the Minnesota Christians, and they just start becoming a team. We're only going to get guys who are really don't like to party, like to live that lifestyle, all of a sudden, and you just get those guys, and all of a sudden, like, let's say it's a really good player who doesn't want to get into a party scene or whatever, like that, doesn't want to end up on the Jail Blazers or any of those type of teams, all of a sudden, they show up and start playing for Minnesota. Like, well, I think that'd be a more enjoyable experience for me. And all of a sudden, you'd have different teams doing this. Maybe one team just embraces the party thing. They become like the Bengals, and they're just like, we're going to take anybody who wants to go wild, okay? We're going to have fun. We'll get Steven Jackson to run our test. We'll have them together. Why not?
Got Carlos Dunlap this year.
Good. Yeah, exactly. Well, the Bengals got Carlos Dunlap this year and Adam Pac-Man Jones. So, I mean, there's certain – I think Bengals, like I said, they're not shy away from guys with legal trouble. But like I'm saying, if you had no draft, and all of a sudden different teams were like, well, we're going to – we have to cultivate some sort of an atmosphere that would attract certain type of players, I think it would be interesting. I think it would be interesting to see. Again, it probably won't happen, but I think it would be interesting.
Yeah. I agree.
Okay. Now, we will be going back to UF baseball. Is anybody ready to go back there again after we've gone down this path?
Quite a tangent.
That was a good tangent. I'm all about tangents. Georgia weekend obviously got the sweep. Then they played UNF on Tuesday, and UF won that game. What was the score of that game? Do you know? It was a blowout. 9-3 was a blowout. A couple notable things. Austin Maddox broke the freshman home run record. My Gator guarantee last week was that he was going to do it last Friday. He ended up waiting 4 days to do it, but whatever. He is now the record holder for most freshman home runs. At this point, no one's surprising. It was kind of inevitable.
I mean, it wasn't surprising at all. He's been having a great season. He's the best. I would think he's better power hitter than Preston Tucker at this point, and he's only a freshman. I mean,
Bob will have your head for that one.
It's the truth. Don't you agree, Tyler?
No, I definitely agree. From a power hitting standpoint, he's definitely been a better power hitter. I think Preston Tucker's probably a better, more consistent hitter.
Yeah.
But I think that, and also, obviously, we talked about the walks and strikeouts. We talked about that last week. But, he's just big, and he just hits home runs. That's all there is to it. He's a pretty simple guy. You talk to him, you're like, well, how excited are you about breaking this record? I don't know. I mean, I guess it's kind of cool, whatever.
It feels good.
Yeah, it feels good. You know, it feels good to break records. It feels good to hit 500-foot home runs. It feels good to tee off from the home plate at the O-Dome 6,000 feet away, I'm sure.
Do you know the record for most home runs in a season overall?
It's in the 20s. He has at least a decent chance of breaking that, right? I think.
I would think he's going to get over 20, but by the end of the postseason, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah,
part
of it depends on how deep UF goes into the playoffs, because I don't know when this rule was changed, but now your stats in the postseason count for your whole season stats. So that's going to help him if UF makes a deep run.
And last time around, you said he hits a home run like once every 11 or 12.
I think it was once every 11 or 12 plate appearances.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another kind of notable thing for the Gators was that Tommy Toledo started on Tuesday night. I think we talked about this last week. We didn't think he'd get to start. I still don't count it as a start. We were talking about this last night in the office. Tommy Toledo, I don't count him as a starting pitcher. When you go in, you pitch two innings. He's on a limited pitch count. O'Sullivan wants him to throw like 30 pitches total. But he did get the start, and I mean, two scoreless innings.
Yeah.
He got the win, too, didn't he?
He got the win. I don't know what the rules were with that. Usually the rules are you have to pitch like five innings to get the win, but if there's a predetermined pitch count, then I guess you can give him the win. And I guess beforehand there's a predetermined pitch count that Tommy was only going to throw 30 pitches, so he was still in line for the win. I don't understand that, but whatever. What did you think about Tommy?
I mean, I think he looked good. He ran into a little jam in the second inning. He had bases loaded with one out, but he reared back and struck out two hitters with fastball. But talking about the fastball, I spoke to UNF's coach,
Dusty Rhodes. Legend. Not the wrestler, but the baseball coach. Dusty, he's been around for forever, but this is actually his last year, so Shane got to talk to Grandpa one more time before he peaced out.
And I asked him about his assessment of Toledo, and he said he looked good, but he looked a little rusty just because he felt like they made pretty good contact against him, and he relied on his fastball a lot, which was true. I mean, I definitely saw that. He used fastball a lot for strikes. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how he does in the postseason, and, you know, if he uses other pitchers as well.
Yeah, I think we were talking about this again last night in the office, that Tommy, I mean, obviously he's rusty for good reason, but if he can be healthy and not be rusty, if he can kind of get this rust off of him, he probably has the second best stuff of any pitcher on the UF. Or any guy that was designated as a starting pitcher. I think him and Hudson Rain both have good movement on the pitches. I think that they both throw pretty good curveballs. Mm-hmm. They have, again, they can fool hitters, whereas I think Alex Pantoliotis, who's usually the UF's Friday night starter, and Brian Johnson both kind of don't. I mean, they're not throwing a whole bunch of different stuff at you. They're not really going to fool a lot of hitters. They're pitching for contact.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, UF this weekend. This is. I mean, everything's kind of been built up for this weekend. This is a huge weekend for the baseball team. They're going to play South Carolina. They're starting Thursday night, and I guess you'll be hearing this Friday. So this will be getting ready for the second game of the series. But UF and South Carolina are both tied for first place in the Southeastern Conference, and also obviously the SEC East. And the winner of the series wins the conference championship. And, regular season championship, which is what it's all about, really. And Kevin O'Sullivan was talking about it. He was talking about how excited he is about this and how awesome it is that this can actually come down to the last week of the season with the two best teams playing each other. UF will be traveling to South Carolina, though, so that could be a little bit of a hiccup. Talk about what they got coming up.
I mean, it's going to be a tough series for them just because, like we said, they against Georgia, they didn't look like they were playing their best. So we'll see how they do this weekend. Also, we talked about it last week on the podcast as well. They rely on a bunch of freshmen. So it'll also be interesting to see how they respond to this kind of situation where it's basically, like Kyler said in his story, a series to win the SEC title. So,
right. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. They also got, obviously, South Carolina has a really good pitcher in Blake Cooper. He is 10-0 this season, which, I mean, from a win-loss perspective, that's great. I tend not to really look at win-losses that much just because there's so many other factors that go into how good a pitcher does. Or, the wins-losses come in, there's so many other factors that go into win-losses other than how the pitcher performs,
yeah.
How many runs they get, the type of defense is playing behind them, all sorts of things. But still, 10-0 is impressive. That's very impressive. Also, 3.01 ERA, which is very good, especially in college baseball when you're going against aluminum bats.
And his whip.
His whip, his walks, hits divided by innings pitched is about 1.09. That means about one runner per inning is getting on base. So that's solid. 7 Ks per 9. I mean, it's solid across the board. I mean, he's a solid pitcher with really good numbers, 10-0. UF's lineup had been coming along great up until Georgia weekend when they still won all three games. But again, I mean, they were kind of gift wrapped all three. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with UF versus Blake Cooper.
Now, I have a question for you guys. You said that UF didn't perform its best against Georgia. Do you think there's a chance they were looking ahead to South Carolina?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They didn't say it.
One game at a time, yeah. Tom. We're taking it one game at a time. We're taking it one game at a time here at the Alligator Sports Podcast. We're taking it one game at a time when we're playing baseball. It doesn't matter. Every sport you ever talk to anybody, if you talk about a game before the next game, that team is taking it one game at a time. They don't even know South Carolina exists. That's what they say. But I think they were. In truth, I think they probably were. I think Georgia, they're playing the last place team in the conference before the biggest weekend of the season.
Yeah.
So there's no way that they weren't looking ahead.
I don't know how many times that question was asked, whether they were looking ahead to South Carolina, but every time they responded,
for the last
each player that responded was just, no, we take it one game at a time. We forget about South Carolina.
We don't even. For all I'm concerned, there's only two teams in the Southeastern Conference. It's the Florida Gators and whatever team the Florida Gators are playing. And so that's basically what's happened for the last month because it's been really cool to watch from someone who's been covering the team's perspective that you kind of saw it and you're like, all right, South Carolina's looking good. Florida's looking good. It appears that those are the two best teams in the conference and they're going to meet the last game of the season. So that was something I've always been excited about. And so I didn't really ask much about it because I already knew what the response was going to be. But every other beat writer who came in would ask something about South Carolina for the last month. And every single time, it'd just be like, what team is that? South Carolina, are they? Are they the Gamecocks? I never even heard of that team. I've watched the baseball team. Okay, all right. So basically, they're pretending like that doesn't exist. But now they can finally pretend like South Carolina does exist. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I think they're going to really, it's going to be fun to watch them and really be able to let loose. All right, well, let's move on to the end of the show. Thanks for listening this far. We're going to go ahead and do what used to be our Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. We have retired that name with the 100th podcast when Bob Colovey and Phil Kegler graduated. We decided we would change the names in their honor. We can't keep that going. So we're going to be going with the Wandy Pierre Louis Bad Angles of the Week. And up first is Anthony Chang.
I'm going to give my first Wandy to Lloyd Landis. After winning the 2006 Tour de France, he got caught for doping, but he denied it for the last 4 years adamantly. And just yesterday, he admitted to it finally. So he gets my Wandy for being a liar.
The only thing that could make this cool, though, is if he goes Saved by the Bell mode and does a commercial that says there's no hope with dope. Because then the kids would know that they shouldn't be like Floyd Landis. All right, Tom, what's your Wandy for?
I'm giving my first Wandy to Vince Carter of the Orlando Magic. In game two the other night.
A worthwhile recipient.
Yeah, game two the other night at the free throw line in a three-point game, and he proceeds to brick both free throws pretty horribly. Vince Carter is a guy that Quentin Richardson might describe as an actress, always overacting when he gets fouled or injured, but coming back in the game 5 minutes later. So he acts all that. I'm wondering why he can't act like a good player at the free throw line at the end of a close game.
Oh! Okay, well, I think he's not really helping his reputation missing those free throws. I think everyone's kind of... He has that reputation, I should say, that he acts a lot. He kind of goes soccer mode, like he pretends like he got shot on the court a couple of times. And then everyone always says he's never going to win a championship because he always just chokes in the big moments or just doesn't show up in the big moments. And he definitely didn't help himself at home, too. So that, I mean, I kind of would get it if he were in Boston where those fans are just rowdy as hell.
But
But at home in Orlando, it's just a bunch of timeshare owners that are all just sitting around watching you play, and you got to come up big in that situation. So I agree. All right, and Greg, what is your first one to be going to?
I'm going pretty broad based with this. It probably includes some of you guys, but it's to all people who don't follow hockey, because right now the 7 and 8 seed are playing in the Eastern Conference Finals, and if that was happening in the NBA, if Charlotte was playing against Chicago, that would be a huge deal, and everybody would be talking about it, but because it's hockey, nobody really cares.
Right, yeah, I think that pretty much everyone, yeah, I agree. The Versus Network is not getting much, or I guess it's on NBC now, or is it still on Versus?
Some of them, if it's in a good time on the weekend, NBC might carry it, but mostly they're on Versus.
All right, and I'm going to give my Wandy, go a little alliteration here. My Wandy is going to Woody Page from Pardon the Interruption. Anybody who watches the show knows in the background he has like a chalkboard with a different like message on it all the time. And I guess in an episode last week, one of his chalkboards read, "Call this number for a good time." But it was supposed to be like a joke. He thought it wasn't a number that was legit. Turned out to be a phone sex line. So the problem with that is the only people that are watching Pardon the Interruption are like 12-year-old, 13-year-old kids.
I think it's a good show.
Yeah, like I loved that show when I was 13, and I'm pretty sure those are the people that are calling the phone sex line. So you're introducing these kids to a depressed world really quickly, and so, Woody, shame on you. All right, now let's move on to the Major Wright Award for Excellence in the Field of Sports that is replacing the Reggie Nelson Excellent Award for Excellence in the Field of Sport. Same rule with the Kyle Jackson Award, but retiring that with Bob and Phil's graduation. So, Anthony, who are you giving your major for?
I'm giving mine to Austin Maddox. Like we said earlier, he broke the freshman single-season record for most home runs hit. He hit his 17th earlier this week. So he gets my award for being a baller.
That's usually what the Major Wright Award is for, is for being a baller. So he gets the Major Wright Award for excellence in the field of sport and excellence in the field of balling.
I'm going to go ahead and stroke my own ego here and give my Major Wright to myself. Because we came into the office today to podcast at about 11 a.m., and the cabinet with all of the podcast equipment was locked. We sat here for about half an hour trying to figure out who would have a key.
You went illegal mode on this. This is an illegal podcast you're listening to. If there's an explicit tag on the iTunes one, it's not because we said anything bad. It's because they had the knowledge that we were doing this illegally. So,
yeah, so I went ahead, and as a last resort, I fashioned a lockpick out of a paperclip. I honestly didn't think it was going to work, and I'm still kind of astonished that it did work. So, yeah, I'm giving myself a major.
Yeah, Tom's a crafty man.
All right, well, my major is going to Zach Thomas, NFL great, who announced this morning that he's going to sign a one-day contract to retire a Dolphin, which is the way you're supposed to do it when you have a great career and then waste the last couple of years somewhere you're not supposed to be.
I can get behind that major.
I think three people just put their hands all in the air, very excited about that. And Greg is actually wearing a Miami Dolphins t-shirt right now, so we have no objectivity when it comes to Zach Thomas. Great, short little man. And Tom, I don't know why I got to stroke your ego. We would have given you a major. We would have done it for you, man. But now you got to give it to yourself, and it's just going to come off petty.
Yeah, I'm
just
gonna,
you see what I had written down for major? Read that out loud. What did I have for major
Tom Green.
Yeah, well, now you're not getting my major. I'm gonna have to give my major to Dennis Green, who is now coaching the Sacramento Mountain or Sacramento Lions, the UFL team. You know Dennis Green because he knew who the Bears were, and they turned out to be exactly who they thought they were. Well, now Dennis Green is coaching the UFL, which is great league. All right, I hope this becomes like the USFL, except without Donald Trump, and that it just is a lot of fun, and it's kind of like a league that no one takes too seriously. The players don't take themselves too seriously, and it's just enjoyable. Dennis Green's coaching the Sacramento Lions, and he signed his boy Dante Culpepper. It's a reunion from when they were in Minnesota together and made magic. I hope they make some more magic in the UFL. I hope they put some butts in the seat and we can watch some UFL football with some Dante Culpepper. I love some Dante Culpepper.
What is it with you and Greens? You're going to give your...
It was not a coincidence. I saw the Tom Green. I saw that Tom's giving himself a major. I panicked. So it's like, Green. Dennis Green. So, there you go, Dennis. I know you're pumped about that, but don't feel too excited because I actually wasn't going to give that to you until the last second. So, Dennis, I know you're listening in. I'm sorry, but this is kind of a half major for you. But it's still something. You can take it for what it's worth. But all right, that's going to wrap up our show. Thank you very much for sticking with us and listening to us this long. I really appreciate it. And if you have any feedback, good, bad, anything you want to think we should play, sort of games, anything you think we should talk about, whatever, just send that to podcast@alligator.org. And we really appreciate your feedback, and tell all your friends about us because we're making moves.
End the show, Barry!